Welcome to episode 12, Digital Outbox. Hello, I'm Shaquille. Thank you for joining us again this week. And I have with me Ian. Hi, Ian.
Hello.
And Chris. Hi, Chris.
Hi again.
So, everybody all right?
Not too shabby. It's a Saturday afternoon. It's been a busy week. But we're back.
Sound so a bit it's all good.
And what about yourself, mine host? Everything good?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good.
You sound a bit rough. Everything all right with you?
Oh, I've got a little bit of a tickly throat.
Oh.
So there's not much I can do. I'll try and soldier on, and but if I cough and sputter, I'll try and do something about it.
Oh, bless your cotton socks. So, let's crack on then. This week's news, I guess the biggest one will be the UK stance on illegal file sharing. Ian, what are your thoughts on that?
Why me? I've got a sore throat. well, I've got really mixed views on this. I guess the one thing I don't like is that the Digital Britain report was put out, I don't know, 3-4 weeks ago. And now you've got Mandelson getting involved, who is an unelected blooming, you know, representative in there. And I just think he's pandering to some of the big media companies' interests in this one. At the same time, I can understand where they're coming from, that people downloading torrents and downloading music illegally in films, they are breaking the law. So I don't know, I'm a bit of a fence sitter on this one.
I think one of the issues is that people have just gotten so used to downloading files, and you know, like sometimes things like that just become like the acceptable norm. And yeah, I mean, like you, I think I've got mixed views. I don't think it's right, but then again, how do you change people's opinions and views? It's almost like become, you know, like going to a supermarket and trying a bit of fruit. It's like, where do you stop? Do you just grab yourself a bunch of grapes and eat the whole
lot? I've
never
done that.
Do you do that?
Are you allowed to?
I'm never going to do that.
I'm going to start eating your grapes.
I've seen people do it.
That's never even crossed my mind. No. You dirty thief.
So yeah, for me, this story is all about being proportional with the punishment being, you know, delivered out. It's all. I think I'm in agreement as well that, yeah, that, you know, maybe something needs to be done, and yes, it's illegal according to the law. So, but it's the fact that you can be a hacker, you know, you can be a spammer, you can be a fraudster, you can carry out other illegal actions online, and you don't have the risk of having your internet connection cut off, which for many is, you know, an essential service nowadays. You know, people run their whole business through it. So let's get some sort of proportion back in this, you know.
But there's proportion, but it's also, how is this going to be maintained and managed? You know, so who's going to be responsible? So there's some more statistics came out this week about just what was the most downloaded TV and movies over the last 12 months. And I guess it's no surprise it's American shows. So Heroes lost 24, were the most downloaded. And Heroes was kicking around 55 million in total. And only 4% of that's from the UK. But that's 2.1 or 2.2 million downloads. You know, if you just take that proportionally, and it's who's going to maintain and keep, you know, that in order? Who has actually got the decision to say, you know, yep, you've been found guilty and I'm taking you off the internet?
Yeah, and I think that's a good question. And also from the sounds of it and from what I've been reading, that it's more of an accusation-based system, where if you're accused of something three times, there's you don't have to necessarily prove that you have actually broken the law.
Well, they're trying to put the responsibility onto the ISPs, aren't they? But the ISPs are like saying, oh, we don't want to manage this, it's not our job. And I think the first thing is they probably have to decide whose job it is, like Ian says. And the other thing is, I think just like you say, Chris, the accusation itself, it's like, if you're in a family and say your young son or your young daughter downloads something, is it fair to then disconnect the whole family from the internet? No, that's... You're going to have to draw some sort of guidelines, I think, for that.
Also, I mean, so if somebody's determined enough, they'll find a way.
Mm.
know, whether it'll be, you know, finding an open Wi-Fi spot somewhere, you know, doing it at work, doing it somewhere, someday we'll go and find a route.
What if you're downloading something you own for, you know, just whatever reason, so you can't back up your DVD because it's got copy protection all over it, so what if you're backing up something you already own? I mean, again, so that'll look like a download, and maybe it is illegal, I don't know the ins and outs, but it shouldn't really be if you already own the right to watch it on a DVD. It just seems like it's...
I'm still sure it'll be, they'll class it as illegal.
Yeah,
because there used to be
really,
all that nonsense.
Is that so bad, you know?
Yeah, there used to be all that nonsense about even when everybody was taping back in the day, that you weren't really supposed to be doing any of that either. I think every bit of technology over the last 20, 30 years, people have been copying illegally. You know, whether it's torrenting, internet, Kazaa, and then going back to, you know, recording CDs, recording videos.
Yeah. I mean, it's also bizarre with that recording stuff. Like, if blank CDs are available so easily, you know, then it's almost like giving you the tools and then saying, but don't use them. So, you know, what else are people going to use blank CDs and blank DVDs for? You know, people don't usually back up their data, you know, like, yeah, documents and stuff. It's mostly for video and audio.
It's the same when Minidiscs first came out. You know, and it was all that line in nonsense. It's like, you're not going to just use it to record, you know, lectures at uni or all that kind of stuff. The whole thing was set up to record music from CDs.
Don't mention Minidisc to me.
You just loved that sharp player.
Anywho, let's just move on.
Yep.
Pirate Bay. Oh, sticking with the same sort of topic. Pirate Bay was taken down recently. But I believe it's back up again.
I think it was only down for like a day or two. I was away at work and I couldn't really check the site without getting in trouble. So as far as I know, it went to a Swedish court and they took the ISP to court rather than Pirate Bay themselves.
Yeah.
And the ISP had no choice but to uphold the judgment. And they were offline, I think, for just over 24 hours. But there still seems to be a whole load of nonsense around the actual company that's alleged to be taken over. So this GGF, the chairman's resigned, they owe money to taxmen, and who knows. But there's so many alternatives out there. I don't think it's going to have as big an impact as people maybe first thought.
Oh, there's so much attention around this one company, and they're, you know, they're only one.
But it's great. It's great for everybody else.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if you really want to go and download something, find another place to go and find your links, because at the moment, all the attention is so much on this that no one else is being looked at, I guess.
Absolutely. And I read a report, someone that said Usenet's an old legacy system that nobody uses anymore. Fantastic. You just hold that thought.
Brilliant. I don't even know what Usenets are. But there you go. this is kind of unusual. We have some Nokia news for a change. They have an app store now for Nokia. How do you pronounce this? Is it Ovi or Ovi?
I don't know. I was going to say Ovi. But as you know, my pronunciation's crap. As you keep correcting me every week.
I would concur on Ovi, I reckon.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we have the voice of... Yeah. Mr. English has spoken, so it must be Ovi.
Ovi. So has anybody seen it in action?
I think it's going to be more at, I think it's Nokia World that they're going to be doing next week or the week after. So I think it's the rumours all come out before it. I guess what I liked about the article, it's just the difference between an app store, an iPhone, or the Apple app store, where it's a couple of devices you're targeting, same hardware at the moment. And what they're talking about with Ovi is it would be universal. You'd be able to see apps on any of the 75 handsets that Nokia produce. And it's just the scale of it is massive compared to an app store.
I wonder if that's a good idea, because some of the phones might not be able to handle some of the apps. So it's like, do they like have a base system that developers have to develop for? To make sure that their application runs
I imagine they'll just be organising the app store properly, so that, you know, if you're on your particular phone, you only get to see what you get to see.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's how I
wondered that as well. Like, you know, if you've got a Java phone, you'd see it, and if it was Symbian, you'd see it, and that kind of thing. And you'd only see the ones that you could potentially run. But I'm sure you're going to get performance differences, you know, between some of the handsets. They might have the software, but on the latest handsets it's fine, and on an N95 it might be really bad.
I wonder whether the store's going to contain... Is it Nokia that has the sort of music store as well? You know, they have that subscribed to, and you can listen to any music in their online library. So I guess whether that's going to be in there as well, I don't know. That's quite an interesting one.
I would have thought so. Mm. But they've also... I don't know if you guys saw their first PC that came out.
Yeah, I did, or their booklet.
I saw some pictures, yeah.
Yeah, what did you guys think of that?
I thought it looked very nice.
Yeah, I mean, the pictures I saw look like 3D renders, so I don't know whether it will look as nice in real life or not. But
at first, I actually thought the specs looked quite good. Mm-hmm. I mean, it looked, as you said, it looked a really nice finish, and... It's got all the connectivity options, so Wi-Fi and 3G and Bluetooth. You can put a SIM card in, 10-inch screen, which was nice. And then they said 12 hours battery, which I was a bit dubious about, because it's probably 12 hours battery with everything switched off. And I think one of the whole point of this device is going to be the connectivity from it. It's going to run Windows 7. And I actually thought it was one of the nicest ones I'd seen. But then I've seen
the
price.
Netflix I've seen, have you seen the price? What was it?
I saw a rumoured price of $800, which I thought, well, that's almost a MacBook.
Mm.
You know, and I know what I would choose.
When is it supposed to be out? Is it on? Because I'm thinking of automatically, I'm thinking of the iTablet. Is it going to be like try and compete with that, do you think?
I don't know. It's due out, I think, all the kind of pricing and release details are at this Nokia world. So in a couple of weeks' time, we'll probably know everything about it.
I like the direction of it. I like the fact that the laptops are now getting fully connected up, you know, with pretty much, you know, mobile technologies in there. And if it is 12 hours or even, you know, anything over sort of 6 hours would be great for a laptop to be away from the office and still connected or whatever.
Well, they had a really nice trailer. And the big point they made of it was it would last your working day. You know, so that really has got to be, you know, around about the 12-hour mark, or else it's just going to fall flat.
Yeah. Of all the netbooks I've seen out there, this one definitely had me a bit more interested than a lot of the others out there.
That's probably just because it's not got Linux on it.
Yeah, and that.
Okay. That sounds good. Look forward to it.
Mm.
Moving on. Microsoft have apparently struck a licensing deal with Wolfram Alpha. Is that...
They've come to an agreement to show particular elements of the Wolfram Alpha output, so they're able to show that within the Bing results. There's no details yet as to exactly what areas of the Wolfram Alpha they'll be able to access and stuff. But you know, it's just another move where Microsoft seem to be really going for it. You know, they're
is it true that neither of them have confirmed this yet? Is that right?
Don't know. I haven't. I think it's more that they haven't commented on it. I think it's been released out there as far as this thing's going to happen. But I think it's the comments.
Yeah, I mean, the story I'd seen at the start of the week was that I think that was they were trying to infer that was the biggest deal that Wolfram Alpha had done so far. You know, everybody's saying it's a really good tool, but it's just not getting.
Well, for all the buzz around Wolfram Alpha when it first came out, it's gone all a bit quiet because people realise that really they can't use it for anything because they can't get the stuff out.
Well, they can't use it in Google or Bing's enough, you know, for the average user. You don't need, if you're a researcher, I'm sure Wolfram Alpha is pretty good. Which I think is the kind of conclusion we came to at the start.
It's trying to break the habit as well, isn't it? I mean, Wolfram Alpha will be good at, like you say, researching, but if you're so used to Google or Bing, automatically
they're very different searches, though, aren't they? They're completely different kind of data searching.
Oh, yeah, they're going after two
information
different...
searching.
Yeah, it's two different markets.
Yeah.
Okay. So, sticking with Microsoft, do they suck? that's my question to you guys.
They certainly need to brush up on their Photoshop skills.
So I missed when this came out. So it was the next day I saw it. And the first time I saw the image, I was like, Jesus, you know, what were they thinking? So if you don't know the story, there was an advert, and I guess it's originated in America.
Yeah.
Which I can't even remember exactly what it showed. I think it was like there was a woman, there's a guy, and in the middle, there was a black guy.
Yeah.
And what they've done for the Polish version of it is they've photoshopped out just the black guy's head, replaced it with a white guy, but left the black guy's hands. And when you're looking at it, you're thinking, what are you doing? I mean, it's just...
But even the head, the way it was put on, it just looks so just nasty. Wrong, it's like my little kid has done on, and you know.
Yeah, some really bad background stamping going on, you know, where they didn't quite match up and stuff. It really was bad.
And just the way the internet is now, you just can't get away with these things. You know, it's just too global. People are going to stumble on this all the time.
It's not clear who actually did the photoshopping, though.
Steve Ballmer.
It's
shit. I think that's what he would have said when he saw the article.
Busted.
It certainly sounds like it happened at the Polish end rather than the American end.
Yeah, but I mean, surely this, you know, this accountability, you can't just sort of publish stuff. There's got to be like also, a workflow. Someone will have to approve. You know,
yeah, and also, I don't think it matters where it was, you know, which country it took part in. It's just bad PR. And it's actually been going pretty well for Microsoft. Yeah. And then this comes up and you're just like, what are you doing?
I think someone else's head will roll for this. Mm. Boom, boom.
Indeed.
Sticking with Microsoft again, Chris, boom. Your favourite subject, Windows 7.
Oh yeah, well Microsoft is still mucking around and monkeying with the Windows 7 pricing. Mm-hmm. You know, just I think everyone wants them just to stick with an idea, you know, make their mind up and stick with it. Because as the story goes now, that we were initially with the European version that was going to come out, we were going to have one price for each product. That obviously got scrapped with the European ruling, and therefore we were just going to have one price for the full version, which could also upgrade everything. So effectively a cheaper price for the full version. Now they're saying, actually, we're going to have two prices now, one upgrade price and one for the full version. And that means that the full version of Windows 7 now goes up. So basically, I mean, it's a pretty standard pricing structure, but they've gone all around the houses. It's a lot of people have, you know, ordered and pre-ordered and now worried about, do I have to pay more and all those kind of things? Which in fact they don't. But the whole point is there's a lot of confusion around it. No one really knows what product they're going to get and on what, you know, and how much they're going to pay for it. It's all a mess. Sort it out.
Again, it's almost like the same with the PR side of things with the previous story. Windows 7 is such a strong product, and I just think they're messing everybody around now, you know, in UK.
Do you think they're maybe messing everyone around because they've got a strong product? They realise they've got something here that's quite important for them, and people are now a bit flustered as to what the hell do they do with it?
To me, this was the time to come out and say, you know, I think we discussed it, you know, a few weeks ago, really cheap price, Vista was a mistake. A lot of people, I guess, the less technology-minded, unwittingly using Vista and thinking this is good, and it's not. Windows 7 is an opportunity to kind of redress it. I think they should have been really aggressive on the pricing. There's no way they wouldn't have made a loss on it if they were selling it for 50 quid, you know, and actually got it sold in volume. I think just all this confusion isn't helping people. Most average punter isn't going to know about pre-ordering Windows. It's going to be the kind of techie geeky folk that are understanding, you know, let's pre-order it and get it cheaper.
Well, it has to be said then that if that was the case, then it's not really, all this confusion isn't going to affect people because they're going to buy a laptop that's going to have Windows 7 on it, or they're going to buy a computer that's going to have Windows 7 on it.
True.
It's only for people that do want to pre-order, like myself, that there is that confusion around.
So have you actually pre-ordered?
The punter has just bought a laptop, say, in the last few months. They might want to... Or they might not even be aware of Windows 7. But we'll know what about them? It's fine for the technically minded people.
I just think it's an opportunity. And especially when you've got Snow Leopard kicking around at 25 quid or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Okay, are you okay now, are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Okay, good. Let's move on to Facebook, which has agreed to change its privacy policy. In response to some recommendations made by Canada, of all places.
So Facebook was in violation of Canadian law about holding on to people's data indefinitely, you know, with no guarantees that you could get, you know, could stop.
I'd imagine they were in violation of international law. It's just Canada had the balls to, you know, do something about it and, you know, step up.
I think it's the fact that they're actually changing it across the world. The only bit is just the 12 months to implement. Just
I know, 12 months. You know, for an internet company, that you know, it's supposed to be defined by their speed of reaction stuff. I can't believe it really would. If it was high on their priority list and they truly thought that Canada had any bearing, they would you'd be able to do it a lot quicker than 12 months.
Why do you think they want to hold on to users' data for, you know, long periods? Do you think...
Well, one of the things they're doing, and I think it's the thing that really hacks me off most about... There's not a lot of Facebook that hacks me off, but there's this one thing, which is... there's an option, I can't even remember what it is, I need to go and Google.
Yeah.
But there's an option where your face can appear on adverts. So they can take your Facebook profile photo and it's almost like then you're recommending this particular product. So they're basing it on what things you're looking at, what things you're posting about, things you've mentioned in your streams, etc. So obviously the more information they have, they believe the more targeted. And that's why Google... That's one of the reasons Google makes so many of the products free, because if they can have a whole, you know, profile against certain age groups and locations, it just makes their searching so much stronger and more targeted.
So basically they're holding on to the user data not to give the user a better experience, it's to make it's revenue, isn't
it? Well, I think so. I'm sure they would argue it is to make it a better user experience, and maybe there are some benefits there, but I still think it is to make it a more targeted platform for adverts.
The other issue, though, and it's, I guess, a serious one for them, is that a lot of their... you know, data is all about conversation flow and things like that.
Yeah.
If you have someone's data that then gets removed completely, so anything they've said or posted on people's walls, then obviously it makes that conversation flow meaningless. It completely ruins that flow.
And I think that was one of the reasons he used to say that there was no way to ever remove yourself from Facebook because they wanted to protect the service for the people remaining. So if they were replying to somebody's question and you wanted to remove the question, they were saying, well, that breaks that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think as a user, if you want to remove yourself, you should be able
to. Exactly.
Including all the data. That's a big issue.
Because it's not like, you know, the conversation thread, you know, had any sort of meaning or anything. You know, it's just like private conversation between friends and families. That's all it is. It's not like, you know, you're conducting business on it or anything like that.
I know.
But then people do have business accounts on Facebook and, you know, and fan sites and things like that. When, so it could mean that, that there are certain things that are disrupted by having someone remove their data, but that doesn't stop the fact that they should be able to remove their data.
Mm. Okay, well, on the flip side, some good Facebook news. Facebook 3 has just been released on the App Store.
Yeah, very nice.
Have you tried it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was... I just think it's an excellent app now.
Mm.
I think the front ends are a lot cleaner. And it's now, for me, it's got all the options. And I'm not a big Facebook user. So I guess I'm going to probably get, you know, limited use out of maybe, I know there's people like with, you know, hundreds of friends on it.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're going to just find that front end fantastic.
Do you use it at all, Chris?
No, I've got it installed and I very occasionally look at it. But to be honest, I hardly ever go on Facebook.
Yeah.
But I have to agree that the app is definitely much more focused and certainly more focused around the iPhone as an input device.
Yeah, so I mean, I use it quite a lot, and I'm just, you know, really, really impressed. It's even got like an iPhone type sort of like favorites page, so you can add more pages.
Yeah,
and it works exactly the same way. You can hold down on one of the thumbnails and you get the little wobbly graphics and you can move them around.
And that's, I actually really liked that, because to me it's like, well, here's a user interface, but it's up to you to put, you know, the things that you want. And you can even, like, you can add contacts in, so you can easily get to contacts, and also fan pages. So I added in a digital outbox link just so I can click on it and get straight to the fan page. Who says I never use Facebook?
Even I don't know if you noticed the notifications sort of like little status bar. And when you come out of Facebook, you get like a little badge if you've like...
Yeah.
So that was quite a neat little touch. I don't know if they've missed a trick, because it's not using push notifications.
That's the programmer's already said for the next update. They're talking about putting push updates in and also trying to do some better searching.
Right.
So you can actually search through your conversation, your newsfeed or whatever it's called. And also, I mean, I know you can upload photos, but for 3GS you can do videos as well.
Mm, very nice.
So it's all good.
It's all good. a bit of sea rush in there.
The biggie.
Oh my god.
Shit. Moving on to our favourite subject of all time. Apple.
Oh, I was going to say food.
Okay. Second favourite subject then. I'm not sure about this first article. Apple care about your apps. That sounds like a Chris type thing to me.
Yeah, I may have put this one in. You know, I wanted to be involved in this section a bit more.
Well, buy a Mac then. Stop being so tight.
It's basically the story that, you know, if Apple's figures are right, which we have no reason to believe otherwise.
Of course they're right.
That leaves a total or an average of 6 minutes per app to be looked through and either approved or rejected. That's carried out by at least two people is carried out by two people, and therefore approximately 12 minutes is spent per application, which doesn't sound a lot, especially for some of the bigger things out there. But the story was, this sounds a bit like they're a victim of their own success, and maybe they're stretching their staff a little bit thin there, and perhaps they should need to have some more people. And the App Store has been a big success, and I'm sure they're earning quite a lot of money through it. Let's want to spend a bit more on getting these apps done or apps approved properly, and therefore maybe you get less bad press.
Yep. Okay. Ian, any input on that?
Sorry,
just waking up.
I was drifting off.
You bored him.
I guess there's a couple of points. I think the App Store's been really good, but at the same time, last few weeks, I think all the developers have kind of rounded on it and said, you know, it's got some really bad flaws, which I think everybody agrees. Some of the rejections have just been, you know, bizarre. There's even one, I think one this week was ConvertBot's latest updates got rejected. And it's because the clock icon is similar to the clock icon used in the iPhone, but it's the same icon they've used in the previous three versions of the app.
Mm.
So why reject it now? You know, and that's the kind of thing that as a developer must piss you off, to be honest, that's the way it works.
Mm. Yeah, they've updated a couple of, or rather asked for features to be removed from quite a number of applications as well. I've heard just based on if they're giving system information, things like memory usage and stuff like that, just because they don't believe that the user wants to see that. But then obviously the user who's bought it for that particular reason has now had that feature removed. And therefore they, you know, feel like they've spent their money on something they're now not getting what they wanted.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we maybe didn't talk about with the Google rejection of the apps that were already in the App Store was that they were paid apps. And if you were a customer, if you want a refund, if you phone Apple, they'll say that yes, you can get a refund. The developer has to refund that money. But it's not 60% or the 70% the developer gets, he has to refund everything. So if you've sold an app for £3, Apple's taking £1, they then reject it. If you want a refund, the developer pays back £3. It actually costs him money.
Mm.
Which is just that. It's things like that I think they really need to work on. You know, I think that's really poor. And at the same time, and I guess it's linked into the next story, Yelp. So Yelp is an app on the iPhone. That's a website as well, where you can get restaurant reviews. And it's actually become one of the first augmented reality apps as well. And it's really sneaky how they've done this. And I guess this is because they're worried about the App Store rejections. When you got the update this week, and I got the update when I was traveling away, got the update. Yeah, it's nice. Just much the same. Seemed a bit faster, which they said it was. And the next day, I think it must have been leaked to a couple of the high-profile bloggers. If you shake the phone three times, a dialogue pops up and says, do you want to enable Monocle? And when you enable that and you select it, you see the video. And as you pan the iPhone round on the 3GS, the reviews or the ratings of all the different restaurants or stores round about you pop up on screen. But other apps that have done something similar have all been rejected. So there seems to be a split this week amongst people saying, that's fantastic. You know, Yelp's got that in there. And but a few other developers are saying, no, that's really sneaky, because they've obviously done this.
I wonder whether they did let Apple know or not. I mean, that would be interesting.
I think people are assuming they've not, because the app was in there. There's no mention of this on the App Store. So when you look at the latest release, it doesn't mention it at all. It was the next day, and it looks like a couple of the bloggers were like, I've got an exclusive. Do this with the Yelp app, and you'll get this option.
So they're circumnavigating the censorship. People are rebelling.
A couple of developers are saying this is bad form from Yelp, and it's going to then open it up because other people do the same. Shake is one of these things. It's like, you know, not
I
a lot of
think
people
to
are going
to
no. So you know, and what stops somebody saying shake it 10 times and you'll open up a porn mode or you'll open up something else and all that kind of stuff. So it's a flip side to everything. I mean, the reason they've done it is just, I guess, the fear of being rejected.
Surely, you know, as part of the sort of developer agreement, they need to tell Apple of all the new features they add in a new update. So if they, never mind the fact that they've snuck it in where, you know, shake thing might be hard to pick up, they would have legally had to inform Apple. And
I actually thought the app might have been pulled.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say next. Why hasn't it been pulled already then?
I just wonder with the inquiry that's going on just now, Apple seem to be doing their utmost to look squeaky clean. I mean, you've got there's some news up here about the Spotify app. If you want to, tell us about that.
Obviously, I think we mentioned a few weeks ago that had been submitted to the App Store, and apparently it's now been approved, and will be available to download soon. It's not yet.
And I think the fact that we know this before it's in the App Store and the fact that it's an Apple representative have said that they've done this shows that they're concerned round about the bad press they're getting.
Exactly. Yeah.
They've never done it with any other app. I mean, TomTom, never heard anything about it, and TomTom's been talked about for months and months and months.
Yeah.
But Spotify said, here's our app, we really hope Apple approve it. And everybody said, there's no way they'll do it. This is competition to, you know, the Apple Store.
Yeah.
And I just purely think this is investigation. And I'm hopeful this is going to just mean a more open App Store in future. And we'll get that SNES emulator that we crave.
Well, one of my views on this is that one of the reasons they might have approved it is because it's not exactly free, is it? I mean, the app is free, but you can't use it unless you're a subscriber.
No.
So maybe that's why they thought, okay, you know, might step on their toes a little bit, but more than likely most people have been using it for free.
But I also wonder how many, if you're a Spotify premium user right now and you didn't have an iPhone, surely this is like a must-have device now. You know, just given it, I guess, a flip side. You know, if you were sitting there, you're at home, you've got your Spotify, and then all of a sudden you can take all that music anywhere for free. It's a fantastic app.
I'd love to be able to try it maybe on like a 30-day period for free, just to see whether the quality is good enough for me to use, and then, you know, then I would consider maybe becoming a full-time subscriber. You know, tenner, I know it's not a lot of money, but then when you add it all up and over the year it's £120, and there's no discount for paying an annual subscription, is it? It's just kind of, what's the benefit of it then?
I think that the only benefit I could see was you got more invites for people, but I don't really see that as much of a benefit.
No.
And in some ways, all I'm doing is promoting their service more, you know, so I'm actually going to invite more customers for them, and I've had to pay the same amount for a year up front instead of paying monthly. But I still think it's got the potential to be, you know, the future of music. I don't know. I'm used to iTunes. I don't want another app managing music.
Yeah.
You know, so...
See, on the flip side, you think, like, we were talking about piracy earlier on, people downloading music and stuff, and it's become, like, almost like the norm.
Yeah.
How would you think people would feel about, like, not doing that, getting music for free, and then actually paying for music? I mean, it's a good way of, you know, pulling people away from piracy, obviously, but...
Definitely.
It's just getting that initial, you know, change in sort of people's views and opinions that, yes, we are doing something wrong and maybe we should start paying for our music from now on.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard to shift opinion.
Yeah.
There's a generation that sees music as free.
I think Over time, as their library grows, so you know, eventually you might be able to get just about every kind of music on it. Then, you know, maybe then people will start to pay attention to it a bit more.
I think it's the best attempt yet. Yeah. At providing an alternative to buying a CD or buying from either Amazon or Apple.
You imagine they're making money.
I don't. There's been a few posts about how their finances were structured, and I know they've got more funding. And it looks like a few of the big music industry players have invested, but also got free shares in the company as well. So it should be a win-win for them as well. So they should be getting money off the service, and as it grows, it should only get better. And every so often, I see some complaints about adverts. And I only go back to it every so often. They don't get in the way for me at all.
No.
But I know some people are saying, you know, I've played one song and I get an advert. I play another song, I have another advert. And I just don't know if that's just bad luck or not. I've never had that.
Maybe it's like the longer you use it, the more frequent the adverts appear.
Yeah, no, maybe. And I know the premium users don't get it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I found it quite random. I think it's more based on how many tracks you've been listening to, and you know, if you happen to have had one just before the end of the last album you listen to,
that's
and you
what
go
I
to
wondered.
The first song of the next album, you get one after the first song, just because.
So if it was
you
every
had five songs,
yeah, it's every five songs, and I've listened to four and shut it down. So you start it up and you get a song, then it's an advert.
Yeah, you imagine in the future if this becomes more popular and it sort of like comes built into like clock radios or, you know, building the hi-fis, you know, they've got a really good thing going here. I think they need to, you know, keep it up.
Well, the other thing I wondered was, would you end up just paying it as part of like a broadband subscription? So if you're signed up to O2,
yeah,
and you're paying 10 a month, 15 quid a month, if you put an extra £5 a month, then on any device you've got Spotify.
Mm.
You know, and I'm just wondering, that starts to sound quite appealing.
Yeah. Do you remember a while ago we discussed about business models, so they need to come up with a good... I think this is a kind of a good business model, and they just need to maybe work on it a bit more. And like you say, I think that's a really good idea, actually. Because then people won't actually see it as, like, paying extra. It'll be like, oh, I'm just paying for broadband, and I've got free music.
Well, we're doing it just now with things like Sky and Virgin, with TV. Yeah. You know, if I want movies, I pay extra.
Yeah.
If I want sport, I pay extra. So why not music, and why not tie it in with this kind of thing? Well, I don't actually have to own it. I don't have to have it sitting locally using up gigabytes of disk. I just stream it when I want it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's all good. Oh well, there is just one thing.
Yep.
Snow Leopard.
Uh huh.
Is out, and I guess we're just waiting for your disc to arrive, so we'll get it installed.
It's been shipped, hopefully Tuesday, because there's a bank holiday here on Monday, so...
You dirty swines. Because in Scotland we don't get this one, which always hacks me off. So we get our extra holidays. It's like the end of September and at January. The fantastic times of the year when the weather's great and you can make best use of that holiday. Anyway, Snow Leopard's out. The only thing I would say is it's been really good the last couple of days, because I've got it installed just now. All the apps are getting updated.
Okay.
So there was quite a few apps that were quite, you know, flaky or had some issues under Snow Leopard, and they're now getting sorted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know what we'll do. I don't know whether we'll do like a kind of, maybe a 20-minute, half-hour special through the week or something like that. I don't want to bore Chris.
No.
That's my only worry. I might skip that special.
But you could join in, and you could be the Baldrick / naysayer in the background. and it just because the Snow Leopard's not got a lot of feature changes, so you know, might be interesting. Or you might just think, sod it, you two fanboys go off and talk your crap for half an hour.
I'll have a think about it.
I think it'll definitely be worth doing something. We could sort of like use it for a few days, make a note of all the features we like, features we don't like, and just discuss them.
Yeah, and just do it as a one-off
kind
of thing. And that means if anybody doesn't want it, they can sod off.
Get it.
Buy a Mac.
Moving on to gadgets and games, which is unfortunately a little bit empty this week.
Yeah, still waiting for that big game season to kick in.
Yeah.
Oh, did anybody pick up Batman this week?
No.
No.
Did you?
No.
So a good game might go missing just because. Well, I'm just waiting for the big names to come up. This one sort of snuck up as a good game, but
I'm just kind of feeling a bit busy. And
yeah,
exactly. That's what it is for me as well.
I still think I prefer the ones where it's online, you know, and I've got a bit of, I can just jump on and do some online gaming. I prefer that, I think.
I might just wait for one of the guys at work to pick it up and I'll borrow it off them.
Yeah, I still get tempted with going with a rental kind of place just for these kind of games.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to spend £40. And I don't want to turn into a dirty pirate and download it.
Mm.
So, but anyway, there was some Xbox news.
Yeah, they've announced a price cut. I don't know if it's a knee-jerk reaction to the PS3 or not, but the arcade box is not a price cut, it's an increase.
Yes.
That's $159.99 now.
Yeah.
And the Elite has been dropped down to $199.99. And the Pro bundle has been dropped, I believe. Was it the Pro bundle or was it called something else? Was it Premium bundle or something?
I can't remember. the middle one.
Yeah, the middle one. The middle one. That's from Bloods.
I was just going to say the story on this was that this has been long rumored price cut and but they didn't want to release it last week because they knew it'd be lost within the whole PlayStation 3 announcement. So it was always going to come.
I still think putting the arcade price up's crazy.
Yeah,
absolute crazy. But
I think it's part of this. You know, the fact that it is costing businesses a lot of money at the moment to run, and it's just unfeasible, I guess.
Yeah, but I mean, they've turned around and said it's to and it's usual from American companies to deal with currency rate fluctuations. And it's like the only way sterling's fluctuated in the last 4 months is the other way. Anyway,
I do believe that the Elite box will not have the HDMI cable now with the price.
I know, another crazy decision.
Mm. Yeah, so an HDMI cable, which, you know, maybe a couple of quid.
When you look at it, you can go and buy an HDMI cable for like £5-10.
Yeah.
So what is it going to cost them? Because
exactly
everybody's selling it for £5-10, making a profit as well. So they've saved a couple of quid, and idiots, absolutely idiots.
Yeah, and it just means that there's people going to be getting home, and they're going to find. I mean, they'll have some way of connecting up, but they just won't have.
That always hacks me off when I buy something, and you need to go and buy, like you buy a DVD player and there's no HDMI included, and you're just like, sod off, just put a crap cable in.
Yeah.
You
get back all excited, you want to use your new toy, and you can't.
Indeed.
Was there some news about an Xbox Super Elite?
Yeah, it's only rumours at the moment based on some adverts that have been popping up, but yeah, a Super Elite. So they've chopped the middle ground and now gone to the Super Elite, which is basically a bigger hard disk drive and includes some wireless controllers and potentially will be bundled with some of the big releases, maybe Forza 3. But it's going to be an expensive.
So basically they reduced the three bundles to two bundles and then they're going to add another bundle again in a few months' yeah. time.
But
the bit that really hacks me off about Microsoft, the amount of money they make off their hard drives must be massive. They overcharge those hard drives, something rotten. it just sucks. Anyway, that's enough hate.
Was this a short one? Was this?
Woohoo!
Yeah.
It was as well.
43 minutes.
We've come to the end of our podcast.
That's because we've dropped all that Snow Leopard and we're going to do the half-hour special.
Excellent.
Well, actually, it would have been a hugely long one had we kept it in.
Exactly.
So, I guess we'll cover some picks for this week. Start with Chris.
Yep, so we've been talking about Spotify quite a lot, but so my pick is actually to do with Spotify, and it's a list that someone's generating, a sort of a shared playlist which you can subscribe to, which is based on their research and trawling through the social internet, if you like, so through blogs and through Twitter, and seeing what people are talking about in the music, as far as music goes, and they're generating that list from all those blog posts and things, and it's supposedly the 99 most talked about tracks currently, and it keeps updating itself. So if you're interested in hearing what other people are listening to or what people are talking about, you want to get hold of this list, which is by We Are Hunted. Again, the link will be in the show notes to actually get the list into Spotify, but We Are Hunted are the people that run that.
Okay. Sounds good. That good? I don't know if you've done it. I've not had a chance to try this, but I'm actually quite interested because I actually quite like Last FM's list of like what's most, you know, played at the moment and stuff like that. I guess this is trying to say what's most buzz around this music rather than what's most played, because the most played is still obviously got like Radiohead and Coldplay and all these kind of stuff. Yep.
And it's quite current and chart related normally. That this is different. It would seem that the list that is brought up is certainly the bands I haven't heard of in the charts or on the radio.
Cool.
So it does seem like a good way into hearing some maybe new and emerging stuff.
I'll look forward to trying that later.
Okay. Ian, what have you got for us?
Well, mine's isn't, I guess it's not a new app or service, but it's one that I've been using quite a bit over the last 2-3 months, and it's been really good, and it's called tripit.com. So it's really good for if you're doing a lot of travelling. And what's really nice is you set up an account at tripit.com, and to get the information about your trip, so flights and car hires and hotels and other bits and pieces, once you get your email confirmation through about, you know, your booking, all you do is forward that on to plans@tripit.com, and it scans through the email, picks out all the right information, and it builds up your travel itinerary. And then you can see that online. So you can see, well, there's my flight details, there's a flight number, there's my check-in time, and there's my confirmation booking code. You can then see your car hire, what time that is, and I've got a reference number as well. I've got phone numbers for all these people to get in touch with them if they need to change it or cancel. Same for the hotel. And it gives you weather for the location you're going to as well, plus a couple of local maps. The really nice thing is you don't need to do anything. You just forward these on. So I'm sitting at work, just forward the mails on. I get a confirmation that it's been imported. And so far it's always worked. You can't actually go in and change it. So if the time wasn't picked up, and I guess if you're using a company that you didn't have a template properly set up for, you can go and edit the time. If you wanted to add in a specific thing, you know, maybe you were meeting up with somebody halfway through your trip, you can add that in as well. And the nice thing is there's a free iPhone app, so you can sync your travel plans. So when I was down in Bristol through the week, and I wanted to get my Avis booking number, so I just fired up the iPhone, it's all there. I don't need to have printouts, I'm not searching through bags. I've been very impressed with it. You can also share out your travel plans as well. So there's a bit of social networking that, you know, if I've got some friends or colleagues that are also travelling, they can sign up for the service, and then you can start to see, well, you know, I can see that, you know, Jackie was in Bristol this week and Chris is down in Portsmouth, but actually on Wednesday we're all going to be in London. And then you can arrange a meet. You can also share out your plans via an iCal feed. So I can just have that in iCal, and I can see, you know, quite easily when I'm away. And you also got RSS feeds. And then there's some nice little statistics just about how many miles you do a year, how many trips you've done. It's just great. There's a free option, there's a pro option as well, which I think gives you better tracking for flights and stuff like that. But I don't need it. The free one works fine for me.
So the iPhone app, does that store the data locally, or does it need an internet connection?
No, it stores it. Every time you start it up, it goes to the website just to see if there's anything new to sync.
Right,
but it's actually stored locally.
Okay.
So if you were in a dead zone, you can still get your information.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been fantastic the last few weeks. It's been really good.
Chris, you were going to ask something?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say this kind of thing's going to live or die on how accurate it is. He's got to make the right choices about your emails that you're sending to it, hasn't it?
Yeah,
and from the sounds of it, Ian, it's doing that.
Oh, I've been really impressed. I think the other one that I tried was Doppler, which seemed to get a lot more buzz from the kind of web 2.0 crowd, but it wasn't as reliable at importing my emails.
At the end of the day, you don't want it to tell you the wrong flight time, check-in time,
exactly.
All those kind of things. That'd be catastrophe.
Yep. And I also like the fact that I'm not having to email an account or anything like that. It's just that one email address. And it's it's based on where it's come from. So you can set up on your account, you know, multiple email addresses that are active for your account. So you can email it from home or work or various accounts.
Be interested to know how secure all that is, because I can obviously pretend to be coming from you, can I?
Yes. But at the end of the day,
your next trip.
Well, you could try.
Do you impersonate Ian a lot then?
Only in my spare time.
Oh dear. So, Shaquille, you have a pick for us as well.
I kind of struggled again this week. I don't want to sort of recommend another iPhone app, so I'm trying to be a bit different. The only thing I can do this week is, as I like to take photographs every now and again. And I've always been kind of like a bit cautious of taking photos in public, you know, thinking like, am I going to get harassed? Are people going to complain about me taking photos? So it's always been a bit unclear, you know, where you're allowed to take photographs and where you aren't. And I found this article on macworld.com, and actually I think this is based on an older article which I did read ages ago, but I lost the link to it. And it just sort of like highlights the, you know, as far as the law is concerned, where you can take photographs and where you can't. So we'll basically put a link in the show notes to this and you can read up on it. But end of the day, they say that as long as you're in a sort of public area, you know, like city streets, parks, national parks, you are, as far as the law is concerned, you are allowed to take photographs, but you should still be a bit cautious, because even though you're allowed to take photographs, somebody could, you know, come up to you and sort of harass you and say, why are you taking my photographs? You have no right. Even though, you know, legally you can take that person's photograph, but you might get harassed. And what to be careful is that some places you might think are public might not be public, like maybe a parking lot or a, you know, like a shopping complex appears to be public, but it's, as end of the day, it's private property. So you might not be allowed to take photographs there. And then there are like other areas, like if you stop by an accident in a public area and you try to take a photograph and a policeman comes up to you and asks you to move along. Again, you know, you legally you are, you can take the photograph, but if a policeman asks you to move along, you probably should do, because, you know, he might sort of charge you for disobeying law for a police officer. So yeah, it's just like a few sort of bits of information just to know your rights. It's unfortunate that, you know, you people are a bit worried about taking photographs, because it's a nice little hobby. But
it's quite interesting, actually, because there was a bit of a debate in Flickr last year. You know how in George Square in Glasgow they always have kind of like Christmassy type thing?
Yeah.
I think last year and the year before, anybody going up to, you know, take shots of it, the bouncers were all actually telling people to move on. It's not public property. They're not allowed to do it. And they were getting actually quite, seemed like it was getting, they were getting quite intimidating for some of them.
Yeah.
Even if they went up in groups, they were getting asked to, you know, like, you know, push off.
This article does mention a story that a guy was trying to get into a concert with his camera, and basically the bouncer said, you can't bring your camera in because it's a professional camera. And you're a professional photographer, even though he wasn't, he was an amateur. And he asked him, what can he bring in? And he said, basically, the lens, camera lens, has to be smaller than an inch, basically a digital compact camera. Right. So what he did was he took the lens off, put it in his girlfriend's handbag, so it's not attached to the camera at all. So you could get in that way. But again, you know, the bouncer might still give you a bit of grief. Takes me back to that story of the Radiohead concert.
I was going to say, I remember doing that last year.
So, you know, like, I had to, like, sneak in my camera because we weren't allowed to. And, you know, it's a shame, but that's how it is, and you just have to be a bit careful.
Cool. That's a good link.
Okay. So that's it, then. That's all for this week.
Fantastic. Episode 12 done.
Yep.
The dreaded episode 13 to come.
Baker's dozen next week.
So, although maybe we should do our episode 13 as the snow leopard special. Get out of the way.
Special one. Okay. So, if you'd like to find out more about us, you can come to our website at digitaloutbox.com. If you'd like to email us, you can email us at info@digitaloutbox.com. You can follow us on our Twitter at digitaloutbox, which we really should tweet a little bit more, I think. And we also have a Facebook account at facebook.com/digitaloutbox. Ian, where can they find you?
Blog, iand.net, Twitter, Sweeper.
Short Facebook. Oh, small.
Facebook is facebook.com/iandick.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, if you want to hear me rage over Big Brother and Jonathan Ledyard, then Twitter is CheesyUK and my blog is chrishutchinson.org.uk.
So what has Jonathan Ledyard done to hurt you?
Oh, he's just banging on about Luca Badoa being, you know, a really bad driver, and I'm thinking...
But he is.
Yeah, but Jonathan Ledyard's a really crap commentator, you know, that kick someone when they're down is just not nice, is it?
Okay, fair enough. I must admit, I do like your Big Brother tweets, Chris. They are very
you
nicely
the,
formulated.
You two are the biggest bloody Big Brother fanboys ever.
Nanu.
And I know Chris has always watched Big Brother, but you, Shaquille, you used to slag me off for watching that, going, oh, you watch so much crap.
I'll still slag you off, and I don't like watching it. It's just I need to know now what happens at the end. So
But surely now that your idol Marcus has been voted off, you won't be watching it?
Marcus wasn't quite my idol. It's like between Marcus, Sivash and Sophie, I don't mind any of them to win. The others so I just like...
So basically the three that had lots of hair, you really liked?
Sophie just does not have hair. She has ample assets elsewhere. Okay. You can find me at shaquille9.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at shaqn.
So, or just look up the hashtag BB10, and you'll find Shaquille's post every kind of 3 or 4 minutes. Can't even deny it.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for listening, people.
Oh, just one more thing.
Yeah.
I have an apology to make. And that's to Brian the Welshman. I shouldn't have called you a Welshman. I believe you're from England. And we'll leave it at that. So I won't make that mistake again.
Apology accepted.
And on that note, it's bye from me.
See ya.
Bye from me too.